Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
All right, hey now, 11 minutes late after the top of the hour, but we are finally into Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com radio. I say that because I've had a couple of friends of mine tweet me, text me, Facebook me, and say, hey, how come you can't get Andy to shut up at the end of PFW on Thursdays?
You can drop the at the end of PFW on Thursdays part. That's a question I've been asking myself
at the end of PFW.
When someone's talking,
just get Andy to shut up. Period.
That would be nice. PFW's Eric Scalavino with us here, as he always is, on Wednesdays and Thursdays in the opening hour of our program. Coming up today as we look at the Seattle Seahawks on this game week number 6 for New England.
Can you believe that?
It's roaring by. It's roaring by. 6 weeks into the season.
And you know what I love about, well, obviously about going to London. I love going to London. But when we have
that's in 2 more weeks.
Yeah. When we have the London trip, you get the bye week at the exact middle point of the season.
Yeah.
8 games, bye week, 8 games.
Right.
It splits
perfect.
The season perfect. I love symmetry. And
yeah, it's perfect. I would agree with you in that one. We will have Russell Baxter, our pro football guru, come in the 3 o'clock hour today, as always. And a little later on in the program, from the left coast, old friend Mike Salk, who used to work at ESPN Radio Boston. And I worked with him, in fact, a couple of years. In fact, I did his very first talk show with him on 890 AM in Boston. When that first launched years ago, and I left the clutches of EEI for a year to go work for these guys, because the guy who was running ESPN Boston was the guy that actually hired me at the network. And so I did, you know, Mike's very first show with him. Anyway, he works at ESPN Seattle, 710 in Seattle, and he'll join us in the 3 o'clock hour before he has to go on the air and do his talk show in Seattle. But we'll get some thoughts on the Seahawks from Mike Salk coming up in the second hour of the program. In the meantime, it is Prediction Thursday. We have Nitpick Tuesday, and we have Prediction Thursday here in the playbook. So I want you to fire them off right now. Webradio@Patriots.com, the email, Ace Ticket Hotline. Do it now. You know the 3 o'clock hour gets busy on Thursdays with Russell and various guests. Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. Again, 508-298-0398. Facebook, John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E. Send me a tweet. Twitter is @JRook0722. Now, I'm going to digress just before we get started here, I want you to get to practice report and all that stuff, update with all that thing, because we didn't really get to a lot of that yesterday. We had such good time, really. I thought on yesterday's show, getting to know Seattle a little bit, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it was good.
It was good.
One of the topics of yesterday's show, however, happened to do with the death of Alex Karras, as you'll recall. We opined a little about Alex and what he meant overall, at least in my opinion, to the good of the game in the National Football League and certainly sports entertainment, you know, being a television star and everything. Today, I'm really sorry to have to report that another, and I didn't know Alex personally. This gentleman I knew, and he was a good friend. Earlier today, actually, overnight, Beano Cook passed away, 81 years old. Anybody who knows football, anybody who certainly follows college football, knows that Beano Cook was as knowledgeable about the sport of college football as any human being on the planet. Absolutely, bar none. And he was a guest of mine many, many times, not only on local shows that I did in Providence and Boston, but certainly during my 11 years on the ESPN radio network. And he was always willing to come on and talk football, and we would always talk Texas-Arkansas 1969, of which he was a real I'm going to tell a quick story.
Okay.
You begrudge me a moment here.
No,
let me tell a quick
ahead.
Story about Beano, because Beano, for those that don't know, he was a publicist for ABC Television back in the 60s. And Beano was actually the first network person that decided to offer schools monetary incentive to change dates and times for their football games. He was unprecedented back in the 1960s. He got Texas and Arkansas to move their mid-October traditional game, usually right after the Texas OU game, in fact. Strippers, I'm wearing my orange for you. I'm going to get Kevin to take a picture here momentarily. But he was the first person that got two teams to move for a significant amount of money back then in 1969. He moved that game to the last weekend or the last weekend of the season, which happened to be first week in December, December 6th. And what that ended up becoming was the game of the century. Texas won in the last couple of seconds, 15-14 at Fayetteville, Arkansas. It got unbelievable ratings. President Nixon showed up and gave Texas the national championship trophy in the locker room after the game, live on ABC television. Huge coup for ABC, and it showed schools and programs and all over the country that, wow, we can move our games too for extra money. That's what started it all. And Beano was the one that got Daryl Royal and Frank Broyles to move the game from October to December in 1969, and we've been living it ever since for the past 40-plus years. Beano was also former sports information director at the University of Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh Panthers, and I'm going to tell a story real quick, all right? It seems that, and this just epitomizes the irascible one, Beano Cook. I like to talk with that guttural, low, you know, cigar-y voice, even though I never really actually saw him smoke. Apparently one day in the office at the University of Pittsburgh, while he was the SID there, lady called and said, I'd really love to have a copy of your football roster. And he tried to tell her, you know, that, well, maybe you should wait until after we do the cut down because, we got 120 kids on the roster and we're getting ready to have cut downs and, wouldn't it be much easier if, you waited for the last 70 or 80? No, she had to have it now. And so he obviously is very, very exasperated. He's told me this story, by the way, in the past. Very exasperated over it. And he said, well, I don't, you know, he wanted to try to save himself. Work is what he wanted to do, yeah. Right? Because he was going to do this for one fan that wanted the whole, you know, preseason roster of 120 kids going out for Pitt Panther football. And so he's like, well, what do you need this information for? I should probably ask that question. What do you need this information for? And she said, well, because I want to sleep with every member of the football team. Long silence, long pause.
Like the one I just gave you.
Yes. And then he said, okay, alphabetically, starting at guard, Cook, Beano. I laughed until I cried when I first heard that story.
It's good.
True story. Let me tell you about the time this lady called me, you know, in the Pittsburgh Panther Sports Information Office, you know? And honest to God, but that's the kind of guy Beano was, you know, quick-witted, very knowledgeable, knew the value of historical significance within football. We don't have the NFL today if we don't have college football as popular as it is today. And I think you probably realize that as much as anybody. The NFL exists because we have a superb college football system in this country. And Beano is as knowledgeable of the players and the programs as anybody else. Notre Dame guy. Notre Dame is how he always called him. He never called him Notre Dame. It was Notre Dame. Notre Dame just can't get the talent any longer. And I say this lovingly, even though people make fun of his gravelly voice and his mannerisms on the air. Always entertaining, very insightful. I'm going to miss, you know, just talking football with the guy. Last time I got a chance to speak to Beano was year before. It was a little over a year. I'd say, what, was it last season? I saw him last year at the University of Pittsburgh, the media room inside their the Peterson Event Center, which is where Panthers play basketball now on campus. It actually sits on the side of the old Pitt football stadium. Media room is named after Beano. And he was sitting, there was a gentleman sitting down at one of the cubicles in there this last year, and I'd seen him in there before, but I didn't recognize him. And I turned around and I kind of looked on the, tapped him on the shoulder a bit, and it was Beano, and he's sitting there just having dinner. And so I said hello and shook his hand again, and we chatted for a little bit. And of course, you know, then one of the things comes out of his mouth is, he said, you talking much about Texas, Arkansas anymore? You know, because he knows I'm the one that I'm the, Longhorn goofball that always wants to talk about UT Arkansas 69. And so he goes off on another story about Texas Arkansas, and I could always count on him for that. And so I think I remember having him as a pregame guest on my college basketball show that night simply because he just
He knew enough
he
about
just,
it.
He just goes on and on. So.
When was the, what did he, recent years, what was he doing? Was he doing any broadcasting?
Still doing stuff for ESPN. He's been doing stuff for ESPN on and off for, since 86. But he's doing TV and radio hits. He would do an occasional Sports Center hit, from the, studio setup that they have in Pittsburgh. He'd go to a satellite location and, you know, they got the city of Pittsburgh in the backdrop and all that stuff. And he'd do that. And then he would still do, regular, even weekly appearances. I don't know if he did any this year because I know he's been in ill health over the last couple of months prior to his passing last night. But, he would still do regular weekly radio hits up until, gosh, the last time I heard him on the air was right at the tail end of last football season, which would have been, you know, football-wise, would have been last January. And then hadn't had a chance to, you know, see him or talk to him, obviously, during the offseason. Mm. Wasn't really sure how things were going. I had heard through the grapevine and the friends that I have at ESPN that he really wasn't doing great, but that they were hoping he would rebound. And then I get the news this morning that he had passed away in his sleep last night. And I had to say something about Bino because he's a friend. He knows an unbelievable amount of college football knowledge. And I think all football fans everywhere owe him a debt of gratitude for helping to make football overall right now number one in this country. It has surpassed baseball. I think most of us certainly would agree with that assessment at this stage. Bino's one of the guys that helped put it there. Absolutely, without question. So there you go. Thank you for letting me digress.
Pleasure.
All right, now, back to the business at hand. Practice report from today.
Some good news.
Go.
They are now down to three missing players. Julian Edelman is back on the field. His injured left hand looked like it was wrapped up or casted up somehow. But he's back out there. Last time we saw him was right before halftime of the Baltimore game when he caught a touchdown and apparently in the ensuing celebration hurt his hand somehow. And it's kept him out ever since. But he was back out on the field today, first time since then, which is very good news. We're still missing Steve Gregory with his hip injury, Michael Omanawanui with his concussion, and Tracy White, who hurt his left foot against the Broncos. But other than that, Wes Welker, he was out there listed on the injury report with an ankle that he developed yesterday during practice. We talked to him in the locker room, and he said everything's okay. He was out there. He was limited yesterday. We'll see how that goes. But they got a lot of guys. They had 18 players listed on the injury report yesterday. The vast majority of them limited in practice, including Tom Brady, right shoulder. He was out there. No surprise.
Do you ever get the sense that that's still a sort of just a tweak at the NFL rules every week that they do that?
Yeah, they hadn't done it in like the last year and a half.
Yeah, tweaking their nose at the NFL.
All of a sudden, they are back doing it again.
Yeah, they got 17 guys listed, and you're like, come on. You know, 17 guy, really? Mm. I mean, that's kind of what I think, too. I don't even, that's why, honestly, I think it's been two or three seasons now, Eric, but, you know, it used to be when the 4 p.m. Eastern time injury report came down, we'd stay on the air here on this program until the injury report came out at 4 o'clock Eastern.
Mm-hmm.
Then we would give it live over the air. Over the internet air, if you want to call it that, and then we would go on to the next show at the time, or we would sign off, as it was a few years ago. But it got to the point where, okay, this is ridiculous. And so, honestly, a few years ago, we just kind of stopped taking it seriously. To be honest with you, because unless you can witness these guys yourself, and you're one of the few that can, because you get to have access to the locker room and you get to see as much practice as anybody gets to see. Really, what good does it do to say, oh, so-and-so's on the injury report? You don't know what that means.
No.
We don't know what that means, and I think that's exactly the way Bill and the Patriots want it.
Yeah. It is, and it is hard to take it seriously, except when there are certain things you can sort of take seriously, and that is if you don't see a guy on the field at the start, chances are he's not going to be there at all.
Yeah.
And that has been the case with these guys who were not out there.
So it's easy to figure him out.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
But now, what you don't know is that all these guys who were limited, to what extent were they limited?
Mm-hmm.
Did we see them for the duration of their time at practice, or were they there, you know, did they get hurt at the very end? That's not specified. So it's really hard to know what limited means. And when you see on Fridays when they list the game status, questionable is basically the same as limited. It's a 50-50 chance of playing, and You really, I mean, some guys who are who you know are really hurt, like a couple of weeks ago, I'm trying to think of an example. Well, like Logan Mankins, guy who always plays through everything, was listed as questionable. And against Buffalo, he didn't play. That was a surprise. You just, I mean, unless a guy is out or doubtful, anything after that, questionable, probable, it's just, it's a farce. What are you laughing at? Oh, your Twitter picture?
God, what a slob.
That should be your Twitter avatar.
It probably should be now, huh?
Yeah.
What a slob.
And you're doing the Beano Cook voice, so you've got face on.
So I got the gravelly face on. That's a hell of a picture there, Kev. Thanks so much. I'll send that to my girlfriend. She'll leave me for sure. She's like, what a bum. I got the hat on. I got the shirt untucked. I got the gut hanging out. Yeah,
I'm already getting emails, though, that said I've been retweeted, so I know it's going viral.
Yeah, I know. It's going viral. But this is for you, strippers! Damn you! It's Texas-Oklahoma week. This is war, baby.
How did a guy from New Hampshire end up becoming an OU fan?
I don't know, and I've asked him that before. He said, well, I always just liked them because, you know, they ran up the score on people back in the 60s and 70s, or whatever the hell it was. I'm like, come on, you don't have any tie to the school. I can understand it if he had a tie to the school. He's got nothing. Oklahoma means crap to him. He just likes the football team because they kick ass. Come on. I have generations of my family that went to school in Austin, Texas. All right? So.
And would you feel the same way if he were a Texas fan?
Who?
Strippers.
Would he feel? What do you mean? Oh, if he.
Would you feel the same
way?
No,
I'd call him a fake fan because he's just not real.
Okay.
I mean,
okay,
so you
wouldn't be hypocritical.
No, absolutely not. It's a fake fan. I mean, I don't think that. I do believe that you can be a fan of a team. If you just like their colors or their mascot or what, I think that's fine. Or you like a particular player on a team, I think that's okay. But I wouldn't call you fanatical about that team. I think there's a difference, in my estimation, between the term fan and fanatical. And even though we know that fan comes from fanatical, we'll get to the word of the day a little bit later on here. But at the same time, I figured I'd just throw that out there, you know?
You're right.
But to me, if you're a fan, okay, you're interested. But if you're fanatical, man, you live, breathe, eat, sleep, you know, everything with the team that you follow. And I'm fanatical about Texas. I'll make no bones about it. It's the school that I grew up with, school I went to. My whole family went there. But I can also be impartial when it comes to it. Witness the fact that I'm not really feeling too good about my team's chances. I kind of think they might have left something out on the field against West Virginia at home this last Saturday, which, you know, ticks me off to no end. But I've seen it way too much in my 30-plus year broadcast career to know that this does happen even to good teams.
Yep.
That sometimes even good teams let one close loss beat them a second week. And I'm actually happy with the fact that this is a rivalry week for Texas, because that should kind of shake them up a little bit and help them to, you know, pay a little bit closer attention to the task at hand. But Oklahoma's good, as much as I hate to admit it, and love to rag on strippers and love to rag on the Sooners. It's still a good football team. So I just have to think.
What time is that game?
It's a noon kickoff on Saturday. Noon Eastern time kickoff. That means I'm going to have to get to the Cotton Bowl and eat my corny dogs early if I was going to be there, because that's an 11 a.m. kickoff.
Oh, yeah. Man, why so early in Texas?
That's just why they always do it. National television usually dictates that. Again, a Beano Cook legacy.
It has nothing to do with the state fair?
Well, it has a lot to do with the state fair.
Okay.
But the state fair, this is actually midweek, midterm of the state fair. It began last week. This is the midweekend, and then it goes for one more week after the game in Dallas.
So they do it middle of the day on the middle
generally, unless television moves it to like a 3:30 game, but they don't ever play it at night.
Never.
Well, because the crowd would be too unruly, dude. Think about it.
Yeah.
The drinking
all
going on. And,
yeah.
Oh, my God. I went to a 3:30 game the year after I graduated from Texas. This would have been 1982. Was it 81? 81 or 82. It was one of those two games. I actually graduated in 81, so it may have been fall of 81 after I got out of school. And Texas and Oklahoma tied 13-13. Stunning. I mean, you heard the phrase, ties like kissing your sister? This is like kissing your grandma.
Oh.
Ooh, on the lips.
Oh.
Ooh, you know, I mean, I love you, you know, love all my grandmas, right? But no, I'm not going to do that. So, that was a miserable day, but it was a late kickoff. It was a drizzly rain all day long. And the place was full of stinking drunk people. I was one of them. I have to admit that. I was one of them. But I had a Texas Exes party to go to. Andy's bragging on the Texas Exes here. And I had an ex-student association party to go to. Mm-hmm. The tap was flowing, and I didn't have to pay for nothing. Mm-hmm. So I'm damn sure not going to say no. I'm, what, 22 years old? I'm not saying no. And I didn't have to drive either. My little brother drove. How great is that?
Your kid brother?
My kid brother drove that day. How great is that? So we got schnookered, and we sat in about the 35-yard line. Mack Brown, believe it or not, the current Texas coach, he was the offensive coordinator for Oklahoma that day.
Wow.
How about that? And 13-13. Can you believe that? Oh, yeah, yeah. Anyway, okay. All right, now I've digressed enough. Anyway, that's a lousy picture of me, but if you want to see the lousy picture of me, thank you, Kevin Collins. Then
I didn't mean to portray you negatively. I took a picture from back here first. And you couldn't really see the shirt.
Okay.
So I wanted,
you had to get the Longhorn
John
logo
Rook
in there.
I'll forgive you.
Yeah.
I'll forgive you. No, that's fine. Well, we had to give proof to strippers that I was going to wear the orange this week, right?
And for the record, I think you're a handsome man, so.
No, I look like a schlub in this picture. So if you want to see John Rook the schlub, you're just going to have to go to @jrook0722. It's that simple. How about that for a blatant grab for followers?
You got to do what you got to do.
Did you retweet it so it goes out to all your followers?
No, I should do
yeah,
that.
You have to retweet it first, or else they're not going to get anything.
All right, I have to do that. Well, I have to figure out this stuff here, okay? See, I've been on Twitter now for, a little over a year, maybe almost 2 years now, and I still don't know how to work it right.
Go to your connect.
I got to go connect, right?
Yep.
Okay. I'm sure this is riveting damn radio, isn't it?
Twitter, one-on-one.
There
Kevin
it is.
Collins.
Oh, Brian says, you need a new hat. Haha, that orange is too faded compared to the orange on your shirt.
I gave you the Hook'em Horns in the,
you
in
did.
The tweet.
You did. Thank you for that. By the way, I see that. Hook'em Horns with JRook0722. So, all right, let me explain the hat, Brian, okay? Let me explain the hat. This hat was a gift from my sister in 2005 after the Horns beat Michigan's ass in the Rose Bowl. Okay, not USC, which was the 06 Rose Bowl that won the national title with Vince Young at quarterback. But this was 05 when Young was a junior, and they came from way down and beat Michigan on a last-second field goal, which was an unbelievable football game. 2 years in a row, Texas got to the Rose Bowl and played unbelievable games. And how many times has OU been in the Rose Bowl, strippers? I'm sure that you could probably answer that question for me. Anyway, I wear this hat because what do I have on the side of the hat here?
You have a Nike logo.
Where's the?
You have a Nike logo on.
Oh, there it is.
And
right
on the
there.
Other side, you have the Rose Bowl logo.
Yes. Little yep. Rose logo.
Mm-hmm.
So because it's such a collector's item, I wear it. Now, I admit it, it's a little worn because it's gone through
but
the
ringer. But that means it's part of you.
Yes, it is. But it does have the Rose Bowl logo on the side, and so it's a rare collector's item, and I'm going to keep it.
Keep wearing it.
Okay. He says, where's the schlub pick? All right, I got to retweet it.
Yeah,
let me retweet. Okay.
There you go.
There, I just retweeted. There we go. All right, retweeted. Mm-hmm. There. Got it. Okay, there you go, Brian. It's Rook the Schlub. Hey, what are you doing today? You want to drink a beer or seven? I need your predictions. Webradio@patriots.com. Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. John.Rook, Facebook, @JRook0722, Twitter. Who's going to win this game? Why, in your estimation, will they win this game? Do you feel like the Patriots have it relatively in hand here? Are you thinking complacent? Are you thinking Seattle didn't have enough offense? Eric and I are going to explore those very topics coming up in the playbook.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics and Bruins tickets to all games with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com.
My name is Terry, and not too long ago, I couldn't tell a first down from a touchdown, a flea flicker from a flea circus. But then, I got NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can watch every Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night NFL game live, right on my smartphone.
Nice call on the game yesterday, Terry.
I told you they couldn't stop the run. Plus, with access to NFL Network, I can watch highlights whenever I want.
Huge fantasy week. How did you know to start Mayo?
Woman's intuition, I guess. And with NFL Red Zone, I won't miss a touchdown on Sunday afternoons.
Up top, T-Mac.
You know it.
Offense is looking good, huh, Terry?
Good. They've been lethal in the red zone, Tim. Lethal. Rookie.
With NFL Mobile on Verizon 4G LTE, no one will know the game better than you. Call *NFL to get it now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Remember, don't call or text while driving.
Sullivan Tire and Auto Repair is teaming up with Bridgestone Tires for an offer that's going to make you and your family very excited. Now through September 30th, when you buy four select Bridgestone Tires at Sullivan Tire, you could receive a $70 American Express gift card or your very own Wii gaming system the whole family will love. See SullivanTire.com. Offer valid August 27th through September 30th, 2012. Mail-in claim form required. Cards issued by American Express Prepaid Card Management Corporation. Wii systems given away on behalf of Bridgestone America. Nintendo is not affiliated with this promotion. Certain limitations apply.
This is Rob Gronkowski. I get lots of mail from fans asking me how they can be more like me, Gronk. It's easy. First, just head down to Dunkin' Donuts and pick up a freshly made bakery sandwich. Second, get a sweet nickname. Third, bench press 225 pounds 28 times. That's it. You're just like me, Gronk. Now hurry into Dunkin' Donuts and grab a bakery sandwich today. Gronk runs on Dunkin'.
Price and participation may vary. New England Patriots and Patriots and related logos are trademarks of New England Patriots, LLC.
What would make your life better? Start with better banking from Sovereign Bank. More than a checking account, better banking is a package of financial solutions with preferred rates, debit card cash rewards, and online banking with bill pay, along with the flexible options you need to help make your everyday a little easier to manage. And now Sovereign is part of Santander, one of the strongest, safest, and most successful banks in the world. That's what we call better banking. Sovereign Bank. Member FDIC.
Want to be a Patriots season ticket holder? Join the Patriots season ticket holder waitlist and get in the game. Be first in line to purchase Patriots season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. Get on the list. Get in the game. Visit patriots.com/the list to join today.
I love,
love,
love this card.
With my Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, I earn more cash back for the things I buy most.
Cash back for the things I buy every day.
I earn 1% cash back on every purchase, everywhere, every time. 2% on groceries.
And 3% on gas. Automatically, no hoops to jump through.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
That's 1% cash back on a cut and color.
2% back on food for the neighborhood barbecue.
And 3% cash back on getting the kids to soccer practice and football and baseball.
Extra cash back on groceries and gas. That's my kind of card.
Earn 1, 2, 3% cash back for the things you buy most with the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. Apply online or at a Bank of America near you. Quarterly maximum on grocery and gas bonus rewards. To learn more, go to bankofamerica.com/getcashback.
Finally, a card for the real world.
Copyright 2012, Bank of America Corporation.
This is Patriots Hall of Famer Steve Nelson, and you're listening to Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com Radio.
Welcome back into the Playbook for a Prediction Thursday on Patriots.com Radio. John Rook with Patriots Football Weekly's Eric Scalavino. Again, Russell Baxter of our ProFootballGuru.com. And we've got Mike Salk from ESPN Seattle coming up in hour number two of the program today. In the meantime, how do you feel about the game coming up on Sunday in the Great Northwest? So we need your predictions. Webradio at patriots.com, or you can fire off on the telephone, 508-298-0398. Let's do that right about now, shall we? Tyrone in Delaware, you're in the Playbook. Hey, Tyrone.
Hey, how you doing, John?
Good, buddy. What's happening?
Yeah, this is the first time I speak to you this season, so it's a pleasure.
The pleasure is all mine, sir. What do you got?
Well, what I got is that this game worries me. They got them. This game reminds me of the Pittsburgh game last year, where they got that physical front, and they got them corners. They got them corners that, because I think they're going to press all receivers. And I think, because you notice, I don't know if everybody noticed, but Gronk is really, I think teams are really keen on him, and he's really getting a softball season than from last year. And I think it'll be tough, because I think his O-line will struggle this game. And it's not going to be, everybody thinks there's a blowout in the secondary. Our is going to keep Seattle in the game, because I don't think Seattle are going to play around and try to run the ball. And so I think the best way to beat the New England Patriots is just throw the ball up and get some PIs on the Devin McCourty's and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And this game worries me, man, especially with the crowd noise. You know, I just still think, man, we need Brian Waters, man, because last year, Brady wasn't getting sacked. Barely. Last year.
Well, I'll tell you what, Tyrone, where Brian Waters is concerned, we kind of discussed this a week or two ago. That ship has sailed, so I think we need to – it's not going to happen. Not going to happen now. It's not going to happen in the future. They are making a concerted effort to the guys that are here, rotating them in and out, getting them learning multiple positions to where they can overcome that. And, frankly, I don't disagree with it. If the guy doesn't want to be here, you know, then he doesn't need to be here. You got to move on without him.
I understand that, but I don't think he didn't want to be here. I just think he wanted some more money. That's my opinion.
Okay.
But, you know, and that concerns me, because everybody's, you know, getting their hopes up. And I'm, you know, trust me, I want the team to be successful. I want them to win. But I was crushed. I wasn't crushed last year because I knew we was going to kind of lose to the Giants. But I'm not keeping up my hopes high, because I know sooner or later – the offensive line going to leave us out to dry, and then either we've won and done in the playoffs, because it's a makeshift offensive line. And whenever we face, people don't want to hear this, but I'm looking at things objectively. Whenever we face a good defense, we always struggle. And the Arizona defense remind, the Seattle defense remind me of this Arizona defense. Flying around.
Tyrone, they didn't seem to struggle against Baltimore's defense. That's one of the best ones in the league. They put 31 points up against them.
Yeah, but they don't have a pass rush.
Baltimore?
Baltimore doesn't have a pass rush?
No, up the middle. But I'm talking about from the ends. I mean, since Terrell Suggs gone,
backtracking.
You know, they went down. I mean, trust me, I ain't crazy. I'm just looking at things objectively. And... you know,
objectively, you can't say that Baltimore doesn't have a good defense or a good pass rush.
I did not say that. I'm saying that. Whenever we face a top, so why we didn't finish that game in the fourth quarter? I'm saying to myself, we had the ball. It was up 9. I said to myself, I bet we don't score here. We don't have the guns to get, and we didn't score. They shut us down where we needed to score. We score a field goal. We won the game.
They put 31 points up. They didn't really need to. They shouldn't have had to score anymore.
Should not have had to. Shame on the Patriots defense for, you know, not helping to win that game.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, you got Devin McCourty there, and that's another thing I want to hit before I get off. Devin McCourty is not going to get no better. And that's what's going to happen. Yeah, he's riding with him. Belichick riding him, but he's starting to either move him to safety. I put some, because it can't get no worse. It can't get no worse. And that's why you're right, we did lose that game, because all Flacco was doing was throwing the ball up in the air, and that guy's coming down with it. And too bad we don't have that type of receiver, but it is what it is. But and another thing, with the linebackers, I mean, the defense is doing what they got to do. But again, I think when they're all said and done, the offensive line gonna break our hearts. Let's just say that.
All right. Thanks, Tyrone.
Okay. You guys take it easy.
Yep, thank
all
you.
Right,
thanks for
care.
The phone call. He clearly, is...
not a fan of the O-line.
No, he's not a fan of the O-line, and I would say that he's trying to play a little bit of devil's advocate and seems to be a little bit nervous about the overall talents of Seattle's defense. Quite frankly, Seattle's defense is good, and I know we'll get into this a little bit more later, but at the same time, I would argue that through the first 5 weeks, have they really been tested by an offense like they're liable to be tested this week?
By An offense or a defense, you mean?
Their defense being tested by another offense, like they're liable to be tested this week.
Well, I mean, I don't think... well, Denver's offense wasn't terrible.
No.
And one of the best quarterbacks ever was on the field.
Mm-hmm. We also had a great quarterback on the field against Green Bay. I mean, you know, with Aaron Rodgers there, but we all know how that game turned out as well. Seattle Green Bay.
Seattle Green Bay. Yeah. I think Seattle can hang with them for a little while, but not enough to win. I don't think they can limit New England's offense enough to win, to give their, and I don't think their offense can score enough the way this defense is playing.
Yep.
To beat them. I just don't see it.
Olivier in Virginia. Hello, Olivier.
How are you guys?
Great. How are you?
Good. 24-14.
Oh, so that was quick, right out of the gas. Right out.
He doesn't even need to say which team.
No.
Very good. How are you feeling, Eric? It seems like you're under the weather.
A little bit. Yeah, I'm a little dragging a little bit right now.
Oh, and he's got to get on this big cross-country plane trip.
Yeah. I got to make sure I'm okay for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I think the Patriots are going to win, but I think we're going to be tested. I one thing that I still remember from the game last week was the ducking from Brady.
Yeah, that was bizarre.
He was extremely uncomfortable, and I thought that the offensive line did kind of a good job to protect him. But I think that the defense that we're going to be facing this weekend versus last weekend is way different. I think these guys are going to come and violently and relentlessly. So I don't know how Brady is going to. How he's gonna, mentally address that situation? What do you think?
He did a great job of it against
Denver.
Baltimore. No, who was it? Buffalo. That he had his best game. It just escaped me. Where he was avoiding the rush.
Better than I had seen. It was Buffalo. You're right.
It was Buffalo, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because against the Broncos, he was ducking about 2 or 3 seconds before he should have.
Exactly, yeah.
He was anticipating sacks before they got there, and it was weird.
And sometimes they were not even there. Yeah.
I'm not as concerned about the offensive line as Tyrone was. Not nearly. I mean, this is the same offensive line that's helping the running game go over 200 yards back-to-back games the first time since 1978.
Yeah, I don't really have any problems.
You know, and the sacks on Brady, I mean, he's getting some pressure, but I think for the most part they're doing okay getting passes off. So
yeah, I agree with you, Eric. I think I'm past the worry about the offensive line. It's a work in progress. I'm still stuck with the McCourties of the world and the lack of talent we have over there. It seems that we're going to be lit up all the time by someone.
He's not getting burned like he was last year. He's not consistently getting beaten like he was last year. He's not looking for the ball at the right time. He's not anticipating where the ball is in the air. He's providing the coverage. He's made progress there. He's getting step for step with the receiver. Thank you, Kevin. But he's just not anticipating the ball in the air as much as he should on a consistent basis. Now, he's had his flashes, like the Buffalo game was excellent.
The Broncos game interception in Baltimore and the game would have been ours. So, sometimes it's one play.
And it's not just him. Kyle Arrington should have picked off a pass on the final drive there and he tripped over the 20-yard line or whatever it was.
That's true.
All right, so 24-14 is what you say, Olivier, right? What scares you the most about Seattle? What concerns you the most?
I think these guys are they are young, they are eager, they are hungry to prove something, and the best of the best is coming into their home, and I think that's going to give them an extra motivation to take us down. And I'm worried about an injury for Brady. That's what I'm worried about.
Mm. Mm. I really wish you hadn't said that phrase.
Well, every time he goes on the field, I worry about it, to be frank with you.
Well, but you know what? Football's football. You can't worry about that stuff.
It's
going to happen.
Any play.
Anybody can get hurt. Exactly. Anybody can get hurt at any time.
Sure.
So, how good is your team? How good is your team around the individual? And you have to hope that the Patriots proved they were still a pretty good team when Brady went down in 07 and Matt Castle had to take
08.
Over. Not 07.
Yeah.
All right, so
that's for sure. And also, what worries me is the fact that these guys have nothing to lose. You know, if they lose, people are going to say, well, you know, the Pats are so strong and so forth. We did our best. If they win, like they've done against the Packers, you know, they're going to get more and more confident.
Right.
That's my word. But anyway, I wanted to call you guys, see how you were doing, give my two cents, and wish you a great week and a good game.
Awesome. Sounds like
Olivier.
A plan. Appreciate
Thanks,
the
guys.
Phone call.
Take care.
We will talk to you soon. Let's go to Melvin in Tennessee. We're in the Big South here. You know, Big South day today. Melvin, you're on the playbook.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
Good, man.
Yeah, well, I guess I can go along. I guess a lot of people have the same 24 type theory for, I guess, as far as how many points the Patriots are going to score. I'm going 24 too, but I think Seattle have 21. But I would say their last touchdown come kind of late and, you know, just a kind of an irrelevant one. So I'm going New England plus three. But I guess one of the things I'm kind of going along with a lot of the things that everybody else is saying. But I guess one of my biggest concerns would be just, I guess, their communication on the road, and it's going to be loud, and he's still out there with, you know, with a couple of people with the, you know, Lloyd and everybody, that could kind of intensify the communication problem. So as long as I think it'll take them a while to get kind of on pace offensively. I think defensively they'll do fine. You know, when you have just the running game, I think our run defense is pretty solid. So when you have those, and Sidney Rice, I don't know too many of the other, well, Golden Tate too, but I still don't think Russell Wilson is going to be able to stay on the field long enough. And I don't care how good your defense is when you're having a lot of three and outs. I know against the Green Bay game, I think they went a whole quarter without a first down. I think I heard them say that. So with Tom Brady being on the field more, you know, with due time, your defense is just, I think, you know, going to wear out. And I think he'll get into a rhythm and they can kind of, I don't see them, like I said, standing past maybe a half if this game should be competitive. By the time the third quarter gets going, I think the Patriots will have the game in hand.
You know, you bring up actually a good point about rhythm. I think if the Patriots could only sustain a little bit of rhythm on offense for a short amount of time, it might be enough to, you know, knock these guys out. Eric, you've been to CenturyLink Field before,
yep. All
right? So what makes it, in your estimation, as noisy as it is? Any thoughts?
Well, I mean, part of it's the shape. I think it's kind of a steep steep-seated
right on the sides, and so the sound,
yeah, the sound is kind of trapped.
It's trapped
right.
in, and it comes right back down on top.
Which
of
Which is
right?
similar to the Mile High, the new Mile High mm-hmm. in Denver, where mm-hmm. it's an open outdoor stadium, but it's just a combination of the fans consistently being loud throughout the game, and the way the stadium is designed. It just acoustically works that way. And you know, anybody who's been to a game at Gillette knows that people get complacent. They sit down in their seats. They're more apt to just sit and watch a game as if they're studying and
they're
analyzing
it. They go into the club and partake.
Right. But even those who are sitting outside tend to, you know, want to sit there and just pay close attention, whereas other fans in other cities just have just more energy. They shout more. That's just the nature of it. Yeah, I mean, but that's just the way it is. And Seattle's one of those places where they get loud from the beginning. Now, the way to, you know, diffuse that is to score quickly, put the home team on their heels, get up 14, 21 points. Now the crowd isn't as much of a factor.
Right. Can I say one more thing? I got to figure out one quick thing. Well, I know that, of course, unfortunately, the Steelers are coming here to play the Titans, so they were loud last night. I can imagine how tonight's going to be. I just wish I know watching the game, once I watch some game, it's so quiet. I was like, I'm turning up the battery, and I'm like, golly, is it loud in that stadium or not? Are we at home or away? It just seems – I agree with that point that it – I haven't been to one yet, which I plan to go to one this year. But it just seems like you said, like, I guess that's the reason. I guess the fans want to sit down there and study the game more than, you know, just act wild and obnoxious. But I think too, if they sit Ridley a lot this week, that would be all bad because you know they didn't say anything about, you know, Gronk and Wes Welker fumbling in Buffalo.
Right,
there was
right.
No punishment
You're right.
For that.
That's a good point.
Absolutely no punishment.
Good point,
so
Melvin. I agree with you. I think the Patriots could stand some serious criticism if they sit Ridley because of a fumble when they could have done the same with those other two guys. That's a great point.
Yeah, they shouldn't.
Right, and that was costing you the season possibly if you lose that game. That's a division loss, 1-3, I think, something like that. I mean, that's just not – that's a bigger factor, I think, than just him, you know, fumbling the ball. He's getting a lot more carries, too. I mean, it's going to happen. Even Ben Jarvis is fumbling now.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, this is my point.
Good points. Melvin, thanks, man, for checking in.
Take care, Melvin.
And we continue our run through the Big South with Sean in South Carolina. Hey, Sean, you're in the playbook.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Good, man.
Sean.
Good. I just want to know, with us having Jeff Demps and not having such a good punt return team, I know he's got injured in the preseason, but I'm sure he's doing a little bit better now.
He's on injured reserve.
Yeah, I just wonder why don't we throw him in there, give him a chance to see what
he's on injured reserve.
So he can't.
That means he's out for the year.
He's gone for the year.
All right.
That's what injured reserve means.
And with Danny Woodhead, I think we should use him a lot more than having Shane Vereen in there or Stephen Ridley in there. I think he gets more yards per carry than both of them.
Not more than Ridley. No, and you know, Woodhead is
different types of back. Too.
Yeah, Woodhead. He's a lot like people used to think of Kevin Faulk around here. We know what Kevin Faulk's value was years ago, and he was one of the consummate Patriots. You know, retiring this week as we talked about on Tuesday's show, but. Fact of the matter is that he was not an every down back. And the reason he's not an every down back is because he's just not big enough. And eventually teams are going to be able to tee off on him. There are certain physical limitations that just won't allow you to continue to bang it in there if you don't have an extraordinary ability. What I think Ridley has, as opposed to a guy like Woodhead, first of all, he's got a little more size, he's got a little more quicks, he's got a little more leg drive. Doesn't make Danny Woodhead a bad back, but Danny is in that Kevin Faulk mode. He can catch a few balls for you out of the backfield. He can
pass
run
block a little bit.
He can pass block a little bit. He can also run the ball on a change of pace. We saw him pick up that 3rd and 17.
Yes.
You know, last. So I mean. That's great because what he can do is he can surprise the defense. They're not expecting him. Just like Kevin Faulk wasn't expected a lot, and he made him pay because he had great talent and ability. But to have him replace Ridley as an every down back, I'm not buying it.
No, because Ridley can do some of those things that you just described in Woodhead's skill set. Plus, he can carry the ball in between the tackles.
You know, he carried the ball 28 times.
Yeah. Pretty darn well.
You really want
151
Danny Woodhead,
yards.
If Danny Woodhead carried the ball 28 times,
you wouldn't get 151 yards out of
it. No, what you'd get is a grease spot on the turf after the game is over because he'd be beaten into the ground.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. And when you put him to Kevin Faulk like you just did, I see that as being a third down type guy that needs to get that quick yardage in there.
And that's what he does well at, and he has fulfilled that Faulk role beautifully. The Patriots need it, and he's got himself carved a niche.
Yeah, and if Shane Vereen can get consistently healthier, you're going to see him start replacing Woodhead in a lot of these situations.
Probably, because Vereen has probably speed and size
and strength
on Woodhead.
That Woodhead doesn't.
But the issue
not a whole lot more, but more.
But the issue with Vereen is he can't stay on the field like Ross Idelling. He can't stay on the field.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
And so if he can't stay on the field, really, what good are you?
That was a good sign that he got in the game last week, scored, you know, was able to contribute a little bit. You hope that he can build off of
that. You hope that that can continue. Right.
Yeah. All right, guys. I appreciate you letting me on.
Absolutely, Sean.
I'm going to continue listening to see what other folks got to say.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the phone call. All right, so, Biggie.
Yeah, real quick, our boy Strippers, your OU fan.
Yeah, what does he say?
He did some numbers crunching here. Brandon Bolden, the rookie, is averaging 5.6 a carry, leading the Patriots. Ridley's next at 4.8. Woodhead, 3.3.
That doesn't surprise me. And keep in mind, that's with that 18-yard run on 3rd and 17 figured in there. So
19-yard run
on 3rd and 17. So, you know, nobody's trying to slam Danny Woodhead.
No. He has his
right.
role, his niche.
No question.
And he knows what it is.
All right. What concerns you the most about Sunday? What part of Seattle, as you've looked at the Seahawks all week long here in studying up, what concerns you the most?
The weather.
Really?
Yeah. It's going to be crappy, typical Seattle. Rainy, damp, cold weather. And that could impact, if it's, you know, as bad as the forecast says, that could impact the passing game. And then you're forced to rely more on the running game, and then that might be playing a little bit into Seattle's strong suit. So I'm a little bit concerned about how the conditions that are out of our control are going to impact the game.
Shouldn't that, in theory, though, help the Patriots with a strong running game that we've seen over the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, I mean, I think they can run the ball well. It's just I think that now you're playing Seattle's game.
Gotcha.
And I'd rather they play our game. They play New England's game.
Do you see this team then in an effort to try to get Seattle to play its game? Do you see them going back to the up-tempo offense like they did this last week?
I think they might have to help alleviate any crowd noise, at least in the beginning. Because if you read Greg Bedard from the Globe, if you read his article on the Hurry Up, it was excellent. Well-researched, quick turnaround, good information in there, well-written, about how they're using one-word play calls, which is, you know, brilliant in its simplicity.
Well, you've seen, not to interrupt, but you've seen the play placards that some college teams hold up with
the pictures, images,
of individuals.
Stuff, right.
That's exactly what that is.
Yeah. Essentially, and they're condensing it into, you know, one or two words phrases.
So he basically yells out the word. Everybody knows, okay,
right.
This is a post route on the
right.
You know, weak side or whatever.
And it worked great against Denver because they got into mismatches. They might have to try to do that here because New England's in condition to do it. Their offensive line, which is a big part of that, you have to get set. Their offensive line was in condition to run from play to play in such a short period of time to get set and run the next play. They might be able to slow down and tire out the Seahawks defense. That might be the advantage. So maybe in the first half you see them run a lot of that no huddle to try to get them tired, and then maybe if they can get a little bit of a lead, then maybe they switch gears depending on what the weather's doing or what. But I don't know if we'll see the no huddle as much as we did this past week, but I think it'll still be
a significant part of it.
Yeah.
All right. And then as far as the Patriots' defense is concerned against a Russell Wilson-led offense now with a rookie quarterback, certainly Marshawn Lynch they're familiar with from his days in Buffalo as a tailback. Do they gang up on the line and make Wilson try to beat him over the top?
I think you might see that because...
So single coverage in the secondary.
Yeah. So if Wilson has time to throw...
Be careful, Scarecrow.
Right.
You're playing with fire.
Yeah. But, you know, if they can get the pressure, which I think they can, against this offensive line, and their starting center is hurting, too, so that helps Vince Wilfork and Kyle Love trying to get pressure up the middle. If they can get to Wilson, I know he's at his best when he's kind of maybe improvising, making plays a little bit, but I think they have enough front seven talent now that they... can neutralize that. It's going to be if they don't and they allow him to throw, that's when it could get a little scary.
All right, brother. I hope you're on the mend then before you get on the airplane.
Yeah, I mean, nobody, I sound worse than I feel.
Nobody wants you coughing, sneezing, or wheezing on the airplane.
No, especially not me.
Okay, because we can all then blame Eric next week if something bad goes on and he infected the whole doggone team.
They sit in the back. I'm in the middle. I'm in business
class.
Well,
I have the same thing, and I'm going to be on the same airplane. So
both of you! Oh, my God! What is your problem here? You guys should take your own damn flights.
Do I really sound that bad?
With Eric and I.
You do sound nasally.
Really?
Yeah, you do.
That'd be fine with Eric and I if we got the whole plane to ourselves.
Let's put you... No. You need to sit back in the bathroom behind the tail end of the plane. No,
that's where the players sit. They sit in the back of the plane.
They like the back of the plane?
That's the biggest section. That's where they get
it. You belong in first class, Rook. Come on.
Business.
All right. I'll give you that. All right. Well, take care,
my
man.
Prediction, by the way, is 28-17 New England.
28-17?
Yeah. Lower scoring on the offensive end, but they do enough... on defense, too.
I'm close to you. My prediction is 24-16.
Okay.
And the reason I say that is because I am going to give Seattle's defense a little bit of credit.
Sure, yeah.
With the field until we see otherwise.
Yep.
And I think that Seattle will probably make it a game for a while, but I think the Patriots' defense will do a little bending but not break. I think they'll only give up one touchdown and three field goals that way.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with 24-16 Pats.
Okay.
But in both of our instances, we have them covering the spread.
Yes. That's only... What,
three and a half.
Yeah, I think they can do that.
Right. Okay, very good. Have a good trip.
Thank you, sir.
We'll see you next week.
Yep. No, wait.
Oh!
Oh, shoot.
God.
We almost forgot.
How can we
almost
forget?
Forgot. Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, it's time to pull up your britches, put on your Argyle sweaters, puff on your corn cob pipes, and gather round the fire for Eric Scalavino's Word of the Day.
I almost screwed up the best part of the whole day.
I know. I totally. I almost forgot about it, too. Thanks, Kevin.
That's why Kevin gets paid the big bucks to produce. He's shaking his head.
I picked this word of the day, not that it has anything to do with Seattle or football or the game, but because I was just reading the other day and I came across the word I hadn't seen before. So it's,
really?
It was a new word to me.
A new word to Eric Scalavino?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, my God.
Yep. It's colporteur.
Oh,
C-O-L-P-O-R-T-E-U-R, colporteur.
Colporteur.
Right, which is a peddler of religious paraphernalia and material. So like when the Jehovah's Witnesses and people like that come knocking and the Mormons come knocking door to door, they're trying to peddle their stuff. It's colporteur. And the stuff that they are trying to is colportage.
I'd call it something else. Badum. Thank you very much. That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's one that I've not heard before as well, and one I am likely not to ever hear again.
And not to be confused with Cole Porter, who wrote some great
yeah,
songs.
Some good right. music, right? I know that dude.
That's your mnemonic on how to remember it.
Very good. All right, Big E, safe travels.
All right, man.
All right, going to take a break. We come back. We get inside the playbook with the one and only guru, Russell Baxter, here in the playbook.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics and Bruins tickets to all games with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com.
My name is Terry, and not too long ago, I couldn't tell a first down from a touchdown, a flea flicker from a flea circus. But then I got NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can watch every Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night NFL game live, right on my smartphone.
Nice call on the game yesterday, Terry.
I told you they couldn't stop the run. Plus, with access to NFL Network, I can watch highlights whenever I want.
Huge fantasy week. How did you know to start Mayo?
Woman's intuition, I guess. And with NFL Red Zone, I won't miss a touchdown on Sunday afternoons.
Up top, T-Mac.
You know it.
Offense is looking good, huh, Terry?
Good? They've been lethal in the Red Zone, Tim. Lethal. Rookie.
With NFL Mobile on Verizon 4G LTE, no one will know the game better than you. Call Star NFL to get it now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Remember, don't call or text while driving.
Sullivan Tire and Auto Repair is teaming up with Bridgestone Tires for an offer that's going to make you and your family very excited. Now through September 30th, when you buy four select Bridgestone Tires at Sullivan Tire, you could receive a $70 American Express gift card or your very own Wii gaming system the whole family will love. See SullivanTire.com. Offer valid August 27th through September 30th, 2012. Mail-in claim form required. Cards issued by American Express Prepaid Card Management Corporation. Wii systems given away on behalf of Bridgestone America. Nintendo is not affiliated with this promotion. Certain limitations apply.
This is Rob Gronkowski. I get lots of mail from fans asking me how they can be more like me, Gronk. It's easy. First, just head down to Dunkin' Donuts and pick up a freshly made bakery sandwich. Second, get a sweet nickname. Third, bench press 225 pounds 28 times. That's it. You're just like me, Gronk. Now hurry into Dunkin' Donuts and grab a bakery sandwich today. Gronk runs on Dunkin'.
Price and participation may vary. New England Patriots and Patriots and related logos are trademarks of New England Patriots, LLC.
What would make your life better? Start with better banking from Sovereign Bank. More than a checking account, better banking is a package of financial solutions with preferred rates, debit card cash rewards, and online banking with bill pay, along with the flexible options you need to help make your everyday a little easier to manage. And now Sovereign is part of Santander, one of the strongest, safest, and most successful banks in the world. That's what we call better banking. Sovereign Bank. Member FDIC.
Want to be a Patriot season ticket holder? Join the Patriot season ticket holder wait list and get in the game. Be first in line to purchase Patriot season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. Get on the list. Get in the game. Visit Patriots.com/the list to join today.
I love,
love,
love this card.
With my Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, I earn more cash back for the things I buy most.
Cash back for the things I buy every day.
I earn 1% cash back on every purchase, everywhere, every time.
2% on groceries.
And 3% on gas. Automatically, no hoops to jump through.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
That's 1% cash back on a cut and color.
2% back on food for the neighborhood barbecue.
And 3% cash back on getting the kids to soccer practice and football and baseball.
Extra cash back on groceries and gas. That's my kind of card.
Earn 1, 2, 3% cash back for the things you buy most with the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. Apply online or at a Bank of America near you. Quarterly maximum on grocery and gas bonus rewards. To learn more, go to bankofamerica.com/getcashback.
Finally, a card for the real world.
Copyright 2012, Bank of America Corporation.
It's time to go around the NFL with football guru Russell Baxter on Patriots Playbook.
Man has his own open now, so you know that it's serious stuff here in Patriots Playbook. We welcome you back, hour number two here on a Thursday on Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook, and we welcome in the one and only pro football guru, Russell Baxter. Russell, good afternoon to you.
How are you? How was your Friday last week, as I got a chance to listen?
My Friday actually worked out okay last week. So you did hear that monstrosity, huh?
Oh, is that what you're calling it?
Well,
it sounded like you were having some fun.
We did have some fun. We did get to talk a lot of football with Hines Ward, who came by. He's a college football analyst for NBC now, as you know, mostly. And then I had to, you know, drop a little Steelers and Eagles knowledge on him at the time, right?
Absolutely, a little Steagles.
Yeah, and then Doug Flutie came by, so it was.
I heard of him.
Yeah, guy that has this famous pass, I think, that he threw one time. So, you know, but that was all. It was all good. Thank you for asking. I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Like I said, I was listening as long as I could. So.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Then real life takes over.
Yeah, well.
Dad.
Yeah. Yes, daddy. Exactly. I get it. Yeah, and you know what? To that end, I hate to sort of use this as a segue into it, but real life took over last night as well when we lost a friend, Beano Cook. And I know that you knew Beano, and it just, to me, and I kind of opined about this in the opening hour of the program, but in all honesty, without Beano Cook pushing college football the way he had for decades, you can certainly make the argument that the NFL wouldn't be where it is today without someone like him doing a lot of that dirty work.
Beano was a lot of fun. I got a chance to work a couple of NFL drafts with him at ESPN. And, you know, everybody likes to laugh about some of the, you know, blooper tapes and different things. But that was Beano. You know, I didn't know him well, but I knew him well enough. He had a fantastic memory.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you met him, you know, if you talked to him once or twice, he always remembered you, his passion for what he did. And those are the kind of people I like. I mean, he loved what he did, and he did it for a long time. And, you know, he's just one of those people that just made you smile every time you saw him.
No doubt about that.
And he was, like I said, a lot of fun. I got a chance to work a couple of drafts with him and stuff. And, again, our paths didn't cross all that much because me doing it, the NFL and of him doing college football, but that one time of the year when those twains shall meet.
Yep.
And back in the early days of the NFL draft, I mean, my days back then, you know, when it was at the Marriott Marquis, and they would, you know, Beano would go up and talk to the you know, the roughly, what, 300, 400 fans
mm-hmm.
who would attend up in the rafters and stuff. But I got a chance just in the meetings and the knowledge that he brought and the passion they brought. He was a fun man and obviously will be very, very missed.
Tonight's football game, Steelers at Titans. Is this a chance, a little bit of a redemption? Is it a season-saving type of game for the Titans if they can win this? Or is it already over?
Well, I mean, listen, at 1-4, and I know Chris Johnson gets all the headlines.
Yeah.
141 yards rushing and a loss to the Texans. 69 yards rushing in the other four games he's played this year.
Right.
But the Titans have given up at least 30 points in every game they've played this year. Even when they won 44-41.
Mm-hmm.
They've given up 181 points already this season. Those are astounding numbers, and it's not like it's a bunch. I mean, you know, against Houston, I think they had two picks returned. for touchdowns, but most of it is, you know, damage done against their defense. Remember the Lions game that they did wind up winning? They wound up giving up, what, two touchdowns in the final umpteen seconds?
Correct.
Okay, they give up, and it, well, that was Sean Hill. That was not Matthew Stafford. That was Sean Hill coming off the bench to do that, okay? So, for the Titans in a division, obviously, where the Houston Texans, and say for the Colts last week, who are now 2-2, you know, the Texans are 5-0. So, I mean, Jacksonville and Tennessee both sitting there at 1-4. Yeah, dire straits. And if they can steal one, no pun intended, away from the Steelers this week, I actually think it's a very, very important game for Pittsburgh in the sense that they started to get some people back last week, but, you know, right on early into the game, John, Troy Polamalu went down again with a calf injury, and he's not going to play again tonight. You know, the Steelers were coming off a bye, so they were able to get some of their people healthy. You know, the thing about playing these Thursday night games, if you can escape with a win, it's almost like your second bye with that 10 days off. And if the Steelers can squeeze one out here and get themselves back above 500 at 3-2, obviously it'll make for the one thing the Steelers have not done this year, besides obviously win on the road, they haven't played anybody in their division yet. So they've got their full slate with the Ravens, the Bengals, and the Browns, and they keep their head above water as they get healthier and healthier, and some of their younger players get more experience. You know they're going to be in the mix one way or the other.
Right, right. Within the division this week, next week's opponent for the Pats, they get a home game again. They get the Indianapolis Colts. The Colts had themselves a nice little comeback last week, and I've already heard Andrew Luck's name mentioned for Rookie of the Year. It's way, way too early for me to say that, but does that give you an indication of, or does that win over Green Bay, does that give you an indication of what the Jets not only might have in store for them, but what might be in store for the rest of the league this year? What do you think?
Well, I mean, you know, he showed it. Him and Reggie Wayne played pitch and catch. Well, I mean, what a magnificent effort by the two of them. To be down 21-3 to Green Bay, and, you know, obviously Green Bay's got some things that they've got to get straightened out. They're sitting at 2-3. But obviously everything they went through as a team, as an organization with Chuck Pagano and so on. And sometimes, you know, the gods smile on you. And it was a comeback, and it was a comeback at the right time in the spirit of what's going on. You know, it's funny. Chuck Pagano obviously has not been the Colts head coach very long, John.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't tell that from the locker room afterwards if you saw all the emotion that was coming out of there. And obviously, you know, his relationship with Reggie Wayne, which goes back years and years, has been well documented by now. You know, ironic that Reggie has an amazing game. What, 12 for 212 yards, scores the game-winning touchdown. And, you know, these are the things that make this league so amazing. The stories, the camaraderie, you know, it was just a hell of an effort. But not to be lost is what Andrew Luck did. And he was under siege last week. It wasn't like, you know, Green Bay wasn't after him. But yet he hung in there, and there's just something a little. I'm not going to put him in the Hall of Fame yet, and I'm not getting Rookie of the Year yet. But there is something about him. You know, we saw it actually in the preseason. He has a tendency not to get rattled even when things are going bad. Even in that game against the Bears on opening week, and they wound up losing by 20. You never felt like he, you know, let it slip away from him. Again, first game for him, first game for a new coaching staff. And they had their rough moments. But remember how they started. They bang, bang, they were up 7-0.
Yeah.
There's something about Andrew Luck, and I think you're seeing it with all the rookie quarterbacks to a degree. I mean, look what Ryan Tannehill is starting to, how he's starting to emerge and become a leader with the Dolphins. Brandon Whedon to a degree. You know, RG3, we've been talking about that. You know, this may wind up being a very, very unique class. And again, it goes back to things we've talked about the last couple of years. The fact that college quarterbacks get so much more experience in the passing game now in school, I think that makes them – it doesn't make it easy for them in the NFL. It's never easy because they face complex defenses a lot more than they even see in the preseason. But I think what it does is it gets them – they're more accustomed to being in the role of a leader because they just have far fewer things to worry about than literally coming into the pros and learning how to throw a football.
Right, right. Game number two, Rams at the Dolphins. Speaking of, you know, we've been focusing this week, obviously, on a young quarterback and a rookie quarterback for Seattle. What are your thoughts early on of Ryan Tannehill in Miami and whether or not it was the right decision for the Dolphins to turn to him very early in his career like this? Probably feeling like they really didn't have a whole lot to lose, that they'd see what they could get out of the kid because this season might be a lost cause. It may not necessarily be that way. If they win at home, they're 3-3.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, no, it's funny because if you remember them opening week, you know, they got, I want to say they were up 3-0 at Houston. You're like, it's kind of intriguing. And then all of a sudden it was 24-3 Houston. And Tannehill certainly had some rough moments. But then a week later, the Oakland Raiders come to Miami and the Dolphins smoked them. And I know Reggie Bush had a lot to do with that, but Tannehill had a very, very good game as well. Then they wind up losing two tough overtime games to the Jets and to the Cardinals. And then just when it looks like, all right, now we're going on the road to Cincinnati, a playoff team from a year ago, you know, they clamp down, you know, very few mistakes, and they wind up beating the Bengals in Cincinnati. And maybe, you know, maybe we look back a little ways down the road and say, hey, maybe that was a big maturity game for them. And you're right, they can be 3-3 with a win here over the Rams. And the Rams are going through their own revival. They're 3-2. You know, we haven't seen them with a winning record a lot over the last 5 or 6 years. But what's interesting about this matchup, and it's a little off the track, is both these teams and their defensive players might be wanting to send thank you letters to the Arizona Cardinals. Because these are the last two teams to play the Cardinals. And when Miami played the Cardinals, they got 8 sacks. And when the Rams played the Cardinals, they got 9. And it's ironic because both these teams have 15 sacks. At the moment, identically, the Rams and the Dolphins. And, of course, the chunk of them came against Arizona. So the Rams are lucky enough to get to play the Cardinals again. So anybody who has those big sack numbers in their incentive contracts, I expect a few nice, kind emails to Ken Wisenhunt's team.
Okay, fair enough. And then the Buffalo Bills, wow, how far the mighty have fallen, or at least we thought they might be mighty. And they've got to go on the road and play those Arizona Cardinals this week.
I've thrown this stat out there. It bears repeating. The Seattle Seahawks right now, by the way, and how we got to Seattle, but you'll understand because we're going to get to Seattle later.
Yes, we are.
Featured the number one defense in the league, okay? In 5 games this year, they've given up 1,293 yards. Now, that's 258.6 a game.
Okay.
But I have to give you the raw number for a reason. 1,293 total yards in 5 games, and they've given up 70 points in 5 games. The Buffalo Bills, the last 2 weeks, have given up only 92 fewer yards.
Wow.
1,201 yards and 97 points
so
in 2 games.
So they're giving up about 48 points and 600 yards a game.
Correct. I mean,
wow.
We saw what happened, and you're like, wow, New England got 580. Oh, my goodness. When was the last time that happened?
Right.
Oh, my goodness, and they, God, they're the amateur hour compared to the 49ers who got 621, okay? And even with this team, and they're playing another good defensive team this week. How's this for a glum statistic? The Arizona Cardinals have given up 78 points in 5 games. Pretty respectable. Buffalo Bills have given up 73 points in the fourth quarter this year.
Oh, goodness. Oh, my. You know, then, if you're Buffalo, we won't get a chance to revisit this for a few weeks, but, man, you spend an awful lot of money on a defense that's given you zero right now.
Well, zero is actually a pretty good number that you throw out there. I believe in 2 of the 5 games so far, they've got 0 sacks. In fact, in the 3 games they've lost this year to the Jets, the 49ers, and the Patriots, the Bills have given up 145 points, and have 1 sack.
That's tough.
And they don't have Mark Anderson this week.
That's tough.
Yeah, so it is tough, and it's a little mystifying. And then you see the numbers that, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick can put up, but this is a shock. I mean, listen, I'm not saying that Mario Williams is Deacon Jones, and I'm not saying Mark Anderson is, you know, take your pick, you know, Deacon Jones too. But you expect it more when you put those two guys together with Marcell Dareus and Kyle Williams and some of the other additions that guys already had, like a Nick Barnett and some tweaks to the secondary. But to give up 1,200 yards in 2 games and get absolutely, I mean, think of what an amazing game football is. Think about it this way, John. This was a team that was up 21-7 on New England in the third quarter.
Correct.
And since that time, they have been outscored 90-10.
Good Lord. Wow.
45-7, and of course last week 45-3. Which sometime in the second quarter last week, John, the Bills and Niners were tied. Obviously, this upset Jim Harbaugh, and they scored the last six touchdowns of the game.
Just like the Patriots did, pretty much.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, it's funny, and just like the Patriots did in Week 17 last year, Buffalo 21-0, New England 49-21.
Correct.
So, I mean, listen, there are cracks in the dam, and then there are gullies.
Yeah.
So I don't know what to make of it, but it's pretty astounding.
The 2-5-0s this week, Raiders are playing at the Falcons, and then you got the Packers playing at the Texans. It certainly seems like the Green Bay-Houston game might be more entertaining, but why do I think that the Raiders have a shot here?
Because they can run the football, and despite their 5-0 record, John, the Falcons have struggled to stop the run in every game this year. I know they've won them all. And, you know, people make the case, well, you know, they had trouble with Cam Newton. No, it's more than that. You saw it last week. Alfred Morris had a good game against them as well. I'm not saying they're a bad defensive team because obviously they make plays. But, you know, if you can keep the ball out of Matt Ryan's hands and hold the ball for 35 minutes, and someone's going to be able to do that. Let's be honest. Okay? If you continue to have problems against the run, teams are going to continue to be able to score points on you. And, you know, listen, we haven't seen, other than the San Diego game, teams have scored some points, okay? Kansas City was neck and neck with them, wound up scoring 24. I know that, like I said, the Falcons are unbeaten, but I think you're dead on. I think Darren McFadden could do some major damage on a fast track at the Georgia Dome.
That's kind of the feeling that I got anyway from that one. Pretty entertaining game on Monday night. You know, Denver's going to play San Diego. I actually mentioned this last week, thinking that while I was really looking forward to seeing, you know, the Broncos – actually, I think I mentioned this on Tuesday of this week. See the Broncos playing the Chargers twice, and the first one comes up this Monday night. And I do kind of give Denver. I think Peyton Manning continues to get stronger every time out. We even saw him overthrow some receivers in some of those tight sideline routes this last week against the Patriots. And I'm thinking that maybe, even though Denver's got to go on the road for this first San Diego matchup, this is the chance for the Broncos to prove that, hey, Manning means something here in the Mile High.
Well, they should, although I will say this. Peyton Manning has certainly had his forgettable days in San Diego. Let's not forget a Sunday night 5 years ago when that, and I know Antonio Cromartie's not around anymore, when he threw six interceptions. And if you think that was a fluke, just 2 years ago in Indianapolis in 2010, Peyton Manning played the Chargers to do four interceptions in a game they lost at home. In his last six games against the Chargers, including a couple of playoff games, Peyton Manning lost five of them, including you know, that playoff loss to the 8-8 Chargers in 2008. Remember that?
Sure.
I guess we'll call that the Darren Sproles game.
And sure.
And then, of course, the game where the Chargers started losing people at Indianapolis in the divisional playoffs, and Billy Volek led them down the field and beat the Colts in Indianapolis. So we always talk about matchups.
Yeah.
For whatever reasons, the Chargers have seemed to have his number. But, you know, I also saw the Chargers' defense last week against New Orleans. And, listen, that's a tough play. Listen, with Drew Brees primed for a record and playing at home against a team that hadn't won a game, that was a near-impossible assignment for San Diego. And yet they owned a 10-point lead in that game at one time. So I can't see anything. I'm still not too excited about Denver's defense, okay? I think we're going to see some points in this game. Hard to kind of get a grasp on where we see this. Might be your classic, whoever has the ball last.
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure if either one of these teams can actually stop each other.
All right, one more I want to touch on before we get to the Patriots, and that's the Cowboys at the Ravens. And on paper, that certainly looks like, you know, an opportunity. I realize they're playing in Baltimore, but what are we to make of this Cowboy team? I mean, other than the fact that it's a great enigma and everybody's favorite whipping boy in Tony Romo at quarterback, is there any reason to think that they might be able to go into Baltimore and win that game?
Yeah, because I think they do have a chance because Remember, this is an offensively driven Baltimore Ravens team now. This is not the great Ravens defenses that we've seen. You know, Jamal Charles ate them alive last week. Okay, I know he got most of it in the first half, but I believe Kansas City wound up with 214 yards rushing against Baltimore's defense. I know neither team scored a touchdown. Baltimore's very tough at home. If you include the playoffs, they won 14 in a row at home. But, you know, I hate to jump on Tony Romo here, but it is interesting to note that Joe Flacco has thrown 4 interceptions in 5 games. And, of course, Tony comes off of games where he threw 5 in 1 game. And, you know, so, but why does this game have to be in Tony Romo's hands? Why can't it be in DeMarco Murray's hands? Because if Jamal Charles can rumble for the yards that he did, okay, I don't see why the Cowboys can't try to do the same thing. Limit Baltimore's possessions. Keep Baltimore's defense on the field. This is not the same Baltimore defense that we've seen over the years. Remember, they gave up about 480 yards to the Eagles, blew a 10-point lead at Philadelphia.
Right.
So, you know, we know how up and down they are, Baltimore. They play great at home, and then they wind up playing iffy on the road. And another example of that last week, even though they wound up winning. But a lot of close calls for the Ravens of late. They beat the Patriots by 1. They held on to beat the Browns by 7. They just beat Kansas City by 3. They lost to the Eagles by 1. Okay, so ever since the blowout of Cincinnati, it's been nail-biter city for the Ravens. So, quoth me, I wouldn't be stunned if the Dallas Cowboys went in there and won this game.
Well, that'll bring us then to the Patriots at the Seahawks. We've been trying to learn as much about Seattle as we could all week, really, because, well, frankly, they're in an opposite part of the country than we are, number one. But number two, it seems to me that a recent Patriots strength, and by that I mean the running game that's gone for about 500 yards in the last 2 weeks here, that seems to be playing almost right into the strength of the Seahawks. So I wonder if Seattle doesn't just sort of stack the box, try to cut down the running game, and make Brady beat you. And frankly, I don't know that you really want to do that either, but then Seattle's one of those teams that we know that Pete Carroll has brought in those bigger corners, those bigger safeties, because that's their philosophy, and it's worked thus far. So how do the Patriots, in your estimation, throw them a curveball?
Well, listen, they're going to have to pounce on them early. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they came out here very early, no huddle, to be honest with you. Try to get the one thing, if you can score some points on Seattle, I don't know how the Seahawks manufacture points. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Okay, I know they have won, they've won 16-12. I mean, all you got to do is look at Seattle's scores. Now, I know they beat the Cowboys by 20, okay? And how did they do that? They got a lot of help, obviously, from their special teams, which blocked a punt, okay? They got a fumbled kickoff, the opening kickoff, which set up a short field, okay? But, I mean, just look at the last three games the Seahawks have played. Won 14-12, lost 13-19, won 16-12.
Right.
I don't know about you. That sounds like three company softball games.
Yeah, it does.
Okay? That's what it sounds like. But it also shows you what their defense is. I mean, they've given up 70 points in 5 games. That's magnificent. They've scored 86. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, the Patriots, we just saw the Patriots score 52 in one afternoon. Okay, so listen, this is one of those ultimate battles of, you know, terrific defense against one of those unstoppable offenses. But I sincerely believe if Seattle can't score, I mean, they're going to have to hold New England way over. They're going to have to force a bunch of turnovers. New England finds ways to score points. They have run the ball with such authority the last couple of weeks, you know, double C-note 2 weeks in a row. Seattle's going to have to hold them to field goals. Seattle, like I said, they don't score a lot of points. 86 all year. I mean, you know, I can do that math. That's about 17 a game.
Right.
I don't know if you can beat the Patriots by holding them to a certain number, okay, 17 or 20. But Seattle is going to have to get a touchdown or two from somewhere other than their offense, I think, to win this game.
Yeah, that's just what I was thinking. I think the only way that Seattle wins this game is if the Patriots turn it over, give them easy pickings, you know, like on the silver platter, or the special teams comes up with something, or defense, you know, turns it, you know, over and they take something back. They have to have some point output somewhere, and if the Patriots don't shoot themselves in the foot, I don't know how Seattle wins the game. I just don't think they have enough offensive firepower right now.
No, they, I mean, listen, they have to find a way to manufacture. Their offense has produced 7 touchdowns in 5 games.
Right.
Okay? Their offensive unit. All right? I mean, although their defense is tricky enough. Now, actually, here's the best example of they lost a game at St. Louis a couple of weeks ago. The Rams scored 19 points by kicking 4 field goals, 1 from 58 yards and 1 from 60 yards. Okay? And you remember how they got their touchdown in the game? The punter off a fake field goal threw a touchdown pass to Danny Amendola.
Yeah.
So St. Louis's offense, in essence, did not score a touchdown in that game, but still managed to beat that team. And by the way, we talk about rushing with the Patriots. Let's not forget on the other side is the guy leading the NFC in rushing yards, and that's Marshawn Lynch, who's off to a dynamite year this year.
Mm-hmm.
Pick up where he left off late last year. So this is going to be this is going to be fun. It's the Dion Branch Bowl.
That's right. Revisited. That's hardly even come up this week, but certainly it's not only the Dion Branch Bowl, but it's a second go around against the Pats for Pete Carroll, who used to be here as a head coach.
That's exactly right. These are the last two head coaches to lead the New England Patriots.
That is correct. And
there
then we've also discovered this week, as we look through the bios and such, that two Patriots, Nico Koudavides and Tracy White, are both former Seahawks.
And Nico, I believe, is a Bristol, Connecticut guy.
Yeah, I think so. Yep.
Yes, he is, I believe.
Yes.
I remember hearing that.
Yeah. So, okay, connections. What they really mean, we don't know. But
no.
We thought we'd just throw that out there.
No, hey, but that's the fun of it.
All right, exactly.
Know? Listen, the NFL is 93 years of 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Isn't that right? That's very true. All right, my friend, enjoy the weekend's games. We'll talk again next week.
You got it, John.
All right. You got it. Russell Baxter, ProFootballGuru.com, Bleacher Report, ColdHardFootballFacts.com. He's our own personal guru here in the playbook. He joins us each and every Thursday. All right, quick timeout. Then we are going to check in with Mike Salk from ESPN Seattle, get the very latest in his thoughts on the Seahawks and the Patriots matchup coming up in the playbook.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics and Bruins tickets to all games, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com.
My name is Terry, and not too long ago, I couldn't tell a first down from a touchdown, a flea flicker from a flea circus. But then I got NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can watch every Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night NFL game live right on my smartphone.
Nice call on the game yesterday, Terry.
I told you they couldn't stop the run. Plus, with access to NFL Network, I can watch highlights whenever I want.
Huge fantasy week. How did you know to start Mayo?
Woman's intuition, I guess. And with NFL Red Zone, I won't miss a touchdown on Sunday afternoons.
Up top, T-Mac.
You know it.
Offense is looking good, huh, Terry?
Good? They've been lethal in the red zone, Tim. Lethal. Rookie.
With NFL Mobile on Verizon 4G LTE, no one will know the game better than you. Call *NFL to get it now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Remember, don't call or text while driving.
Sullivan Tire and Auto Repair is teaming up with Bridgestone Tires for an offer that's going to make you and your family very excited. Now through September 30th, when you buy 4 select Bridgestone Tires at Sullivan Tire, you could receive a $70 American Express gift card or your very own Wii gaming system the whole family will love. See SullivanTire.com. Offer valid August 27th through September 30th, 2012. Mail-in claim form required. Cards issued by American Express Prepaid Card Management Corporation. Wii systems given away on behalf of Bridgestone America. Nintendo is not affiliated with this promotion. Certain limitations apply.
This is Rob Gronkowski. I get lots of mail from fans asking me how they can be more like me, Gronk. It's easy. First, just head down to Dunkin' Donuts and pick up a freshly made bakery sandwich. Second, get a sweet nickname. Third, bench press 225 pounds 28 times. That's it. You're just like me, Gronk. Now hurry into Dunkin' Donuts and grab a bakery sandwich today. Gronk runs on Dunkin'.
Price and participation may vary. New England Patriots and Patriots and related logos are trademarks of New England Patriots, LLC.
What would make your life better? Start with better banking from Sovereign Bank. More than a checking account, better banking is a package of financial solutions with preferred rates, debit card, cash rewards, and online banking with bill pay, along with the flexible options you need to help make your everyday a little easier to manage. And now Sovereign is part of Santander, one of the strongest, safest, and most successful banks in the world. That's what we call better banking. Sovereign Bank, member FDIC.
Want to be a Patriot season ticket holder? Join the Patriot season ticket holder waitlist and get in the game. Be first in line to purchase Patriot season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. Get on the list. Get in the game. Visit Patriots.com/the list to join today.
I love,
love,
love this card.
With my Bank of AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, I earn more cash back for the things I buy most.
Cash back for the things I buy every day.
I earn 1% cash back on every purchase, everywhere, every time.
2% on groceries.
And 3% on gas. Automatically, no hoops to jump through.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
That's 1% cash back on a cut and color.
2% back on food for the neighborhood barbecue.
And 3% cash back on getting the kids to soccer practice and football and baseball.
Extra cash back on groceries and gas. That's my kind of card.
Earn 1, 2, 3% cash back for the things you buy most with the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. Apply online or at a Bank of America near you. Quarterly maximum on grocery and gas bonus rewards. To learn more, go to bankofamerica.com/getcashback.
Finally, a card for the real world.
Copyright 2012, Bank of America Corporation.
Of course, the opponent this week being the Seattle Seahawks, and we thought we would check in with someone who's got to know a little bit about the Seahawks. Worked a number of years ago here in the Northeast, in fact, at ESPN Boston, with a gentleman by the name of Mike Salk. He now works for ESPN Seattle. He joined us here in Patriots Playbook. It is great to talk to you again, my friend, and how is the Pacific Northwest?
It is beautiful. Summer just ended. It is now going to be gray for the next 6 months.
I've heard that about Seattle. We actually spent quite a bit of time this week talking about Seattle and the area and really just trying to kind of get to know it a little bit. And most of the emails said, you know, it's not as rainy up here as people make it out to be, but it is gray and cloudy for about 6 months.
That's exactly right. The winters aren't nearly as bad as they are in Boston. You know, it never gets that cold. It never pours. There's never thunder. There's never lightning. It never really rains hard. But from about now until July 4th, it's gray.
Well, hang in there with that, my friend. I sure appreciate that.
Sure.
Are we oversimplifying things this week by saying that this Seahawks team is mostly defense and not enough offense? Is that really an oversimplification? Or how far off am I by using that sort of analogy?
Well, it's not an it is a simplification, but it's not an oversimplification. I mean, that is, you know, very basically how this team was built. They are an old school play defense, pound the rock, run the ball, and only throw when you have to, don't make a lot of mistakes. People won't believe it, but they're actually built, I think, very similarly to the 2001 Patriots team that won that first Super Bowl. They're not exactly the same, nobody will say that, but same idea. Run the ball, play defense, young quarterback who's talented and has something special about him, but he's being restrained and told, look, don't turn the ball over. And if you go back and look at Brady's numbers in that first Super Bowl season, he didn't throw for huge yards, short of that one game, week 4 or 5 against San Diego. He's throwing for 220 yards a game, and, you know, he's only throwing the ball maybe 15 or 20 times. But he wasn't turning the ball over, and they were finding ways to win with the running game and with that defense. Pete Carroll's built a very similar team here in Seattle this year.
You know, that's actually a great analogy, and I was kind of heading that direction because it seemed to me that's what Pete Carroll and everybody concerned with the Seahawks right now are trying to do with Russell Wilson. You're speaking of the young quarterbacks. Be that quote-unquote, and I almost hate to use this name and this figure and this analogy, but be the game manager and let the other guys who have a little more experience really be there for you. Don't lose the game for us, but be there to kind of handle the situation.
Let me tell you what, I love the phrase game manager. Everyone gives it a bad rap and says it's a whole, nobody should be a game manager and it's an insult. Do you remember, I mean, to go back 10 years, to Tom Brady's first few years, people used that phrase about him all the time, and it was accurate, and it's not a bad thing. When you're a young quarterback who make a lot of mistakes, that's what young quarterbacks do, the goal is to limit those mistakes. It's not to throw the ball 50 times a game and spread it open. And in fact, if you don't have one of the five or maybe 10 elite franchise quarterbacks in the NFL, why would you throw the ball 50 times a game? Just because that's what the league says you're supposed to do? It doesn't make any sense. If you've got a very good defense and a good running game and a young quarterback, play to the strengths of your team. Let him manage the game. Let him get it to the end of the game and try to make a couple of big plays when it matters. Do I think Russell Wilson could grow into being a franchise quarterback? I actually do. I think the world of this kid, and I think he's going to be a very special player. Is he that guy right now? No, of course not. So why ask him to be? Let him do what he's good at, allow him to be accurate, make good decisions, roll out of the pocket, work on play action, maybe take one or two deep shots a game, and other than that, don't make mistakes.
You know, that's actually a pretty good way to put it. I asked the question because it's been so many years since we've actually had to have a game manager ourselves here in New England, as you very well know. So what else about this Seattle offense, though, that helps Russell Wilson, by your estimation here, be that game manager?
Well, it's the running game, obviously. Marshawn Lynch, second in the league right now in running, and has really been the best in the league, I think, since week 9 it is last year. Although I hate those stats, though. They're kind of made up and contrived. Look, he's a good running back. He doesn't fumble a lot, I'll say that right, and he'll end up fumbling 3 times this weekend, but you know what I mean. He hangs on to the ball, ball security is at a premium, and then he just runs through people. He has been the identity of this team ever since he arrived because of his style, which is a never say die, keep on fighting, try to get that extra yard or two and run people over when you have the opportunity. You know, Golden Tate occasionally will make the play. Sidney Rice, if you leave him alone, will make plays. And I know this Patriots secondary is not great, so there are going to be times where those guys will get open. They got a tight end in Zach Miller, who they probably need to use more than they do right now. But they're not a great offense. They don't have enough weapons. Even if Wilson was a great quarterback right now, they don't have enough weapons around him, nor a great enough pass-protecting deep offensive line for him to ever be great. But they do enough. You know, that's why they're 3-2. They let their defense play the suffocating style that they have. They let their defense try to take the ball away and give a short field to that offense. And then they try to beat you, when they only have to go 50 yards instead of 80.
All right, let's flip that to the other side for a moment. Mike Salk, again, of ESPN Seattle, joining us here in the Patriots playbook. You know, I've heard the term for Seattle's defense used is sort of like defensive ingenuity. We hear the term offensive ingenuity, but it seems like Seattle's defense is doing some smart things in order to give it, as a team, a chance to win football games. How are they being smart? What do they do that jumps out at you that sets them apart right now maybe from some other teams?
Well, I've seen that as well. I don't know whether that's true or not. You know, I'm not going to pretend like I played the game or break down film or can tell you, you know, that they run a different coverage scheme. I don't know any of that stuff. I'm not going to pretend. I do know, John, is that they built the defense differently. Instead of going with, you know, 3 or 4 short, fast cornerbacks, Pete Carroll said, nope, give me big, big dudes on the outside. Brandon Browner and Richard Sherman will be the two biggest cornerbacks you see all year. They're huge, and they will toss you around at the line of scrimmage. Cam Chancellor is a defensive end playing strong safety. And then Phil Thomas kind of goes against the mold that they have. He's a lot more fast than he is large. But that secondary is unique. Then you go to the defensive line, which is really the strength of this team. Brandon Meebane, you don't hear a lot about him. He's one of the best interior defensive linemen you'll see. Red Bryant plays on the outside as a defensive end. He's not a pass rusher. He is not a pass rushing end. He is a plant his 2 feet in the ground and not let anyone run by him defensive end. When he's healthy and plays, nobody has run on this team. So, again, it's not that they're great, although I think they are. It's not that I have any idea what they do scheme-wise. just that I think they do it differently with a very different personnel package.
And then I guess the final question here is has to do with the head coach himself. Obviously, he spent some time here in the late 90s as head coach of this particular team, franchise, although you can certainly make the argument he didn't have at his disposal then what someone like Bill Belichick has at his disposal now. How do you feel like, and has he even spoken to you guys about this at all in this week, how has he changed as a head coach? How did the USC experience help him get back into the NFL?
Well, look, I mean, his personality is the same, and it didn't. I was in Boston at the time. Believe me, I know. When Pete Carroll was hired here, I said, this is never going to work. That style will never work in the NFL. You can't be rah-rah. And I don't know whether you can be or not, to be perfectly honest. You know, over time, we'll see how well that style lasts for Pete. But here's what's changed about him, and nobody ever wants to talk about the fact he didn't really have any control when he was in New England, right?
Yeah.
Who was in charge? Bobby Greer was in charge, not Pete Carroll. So if he ever wanted to discipline somebody, he had no ability to do that. You know, if there was a problem, he had no ability to say, okay, you're out of here, you're the issue, you're on the bench, you're fired, you're cut. Here in Seattle, he's done those things. He cut T.J. Houshmandzadeh right off the bat and said, I'm sorry, you're overpaid, you're not doing what I need you to do, see you later. He brought in Lendale White, an old buddy of his from USC, and when Lendale White missed a couple of meetings, Pete Carroll cut him and said, see you later. I'm not going to let you stick around just because, you know, we used to know each other. That has not been Pete's style since coming to Seattle, and I think a lot of it just has to do with having a lot more power than he had before. Now, is he still rah-rah? Yeah, he definitely is, and does that rub me and some other people the wrong way? Sure, and it will never, ever work in a city like Boston, but in Seattle, they don't care about that. They don't need their coach to be a taskmaster or a disciplinarian. It's not important to people here the same way it is in Boston. So what you get from Pete, I think, is actually a little more similar to Belichick than anyone will ever admit. Not in personality, believe me. Their press conferences couldn't be more opposite. But in terms of his ability to think differently, to zig when everyone else zags, to look for value, to say, you know, Belichick, I think, did it better than anyone where he said, wait, hold on. Everyone is trying to beat me with two cornerbacks. I'm going to find their problem and get a third wide receiver that's going to go after their third corner, and I'm going to win that way.
Mm-hmm.
Carroll has said, well, all right, everyone is trying to run these receivers around. Well, okay, I'm going to push them around with even bigger cornerbacks than they have. And I got a lot of respect for that ability to try to think ahead of the NFL instead of trying to play copycat.
Good stuff. Mike, thanks for taking a couple of moments to catch up with us and give us a little insight on the Seahawks. And continued success, my friend. We'll hear you on the network again, sure, I'm soon.
Awesome. Thanks, John. Good to talk to you.
All right, Mike. So there he goes, off to the air, off to the airways on ESPN Seattle. I think it's 710 is the signal in Seattle. For those of you that are up in that part of the country, you probably heard him. Good guy and obviously very well spoken and knows a lot about the Seahawks. Perhaps that has gotten you somewhat educated here today and this week. All right, let's get to some emails now and some Facebook posts while we have time left in the program. Prediction Thursday, as it is, Jordan in Prince George, British Columbia, says, Mr. Rook, I get to spend 8 hours painting today, so again, I thank you for the entertainment. Every week we hear whoever wins the turnover battle usually wins the games. The way Brady's been ducking lately and anticipating the sack, I believe he's going to fumble the ball a couple times. Would you agree this could be the game where our defense will have to step up and win the game? I see this game being close until the final Seattle drive where Wilson throws a pick to McCourty, as I'm sure he'll be targeted for most of the game. Interesting thoughts, Jordan, and thank you for the compliment. You know, here's the thing about the Patriot defense. They've got to be ready to do that every week because you just don't know when Tom's going to have an off day. And quite frankly, we've seen a couple of those over the last couple of years. He's liable to have more of them as his career continues here for the next, you know, few years as well. So the defense has to be ready to do that every week. But a good number that I saw tweeted around today is the fact that the Patriots defense, as maligned as it might have been over the last couple of years in terms of giving up yardage, bending but maybe not breaking quietly, whatever, the Patriots lead the NFL in takeaways since 2009. More takeaways, more turnovers forced than any other team in the National Football League over the last 3 years. So They know how to do that. That's kept them in games already. Joe in Michigan. John, after how this season's going, it's feeling pretty good to be 3-2. Patriots appear to have the most balanced and potent offense, will only get better with the eventual return of Hernandez and Edelman. Anyway, last week I predicted 38-28, ended up being 31-21. Got the difference right. Definitely expected it to be a closer game throughout the whole thing. This week I'm going with the Pats win 28-16 over the Seahawks. The scoring will be two touchdown passes from Brady, one going to Vereen, one to Gronk. I think Vereen starts to play a little more of a receiving back role. I'm not sure why we're getting all of a sudden all hunky-dory with Shane Vereen. Not, you know, that I think he's a bad guy, but what's wrong with staying and working with what you have? I mean, pretty good 1-2 punch right now in Bolden and Ridley. I forgot his name. Gostkowski kicks and makes two field goals. Ridley runs the ball for a score. Tom throws to Walker for a two-point conversion. Okay. Seahawks get a touchdown and three field goals. Interesting choice of scoring. The only way the Patriots go for a two-point conversion is if they're behind. You don't chase points. And if you're ahead in the game and going for two to even it out, that's chasing points. You won't do that. Sean says, in Maryland, I believe this will be a close game for the first three quarters. I'm thinking something like 10-14, Pats leaning going into the fourth. Patriots hurry up tempo will have just worn Seattle down, leaving Ridley and Bolden to go off in the fourth. Patriots end up running away with this one 31-10. And Seattle is very quiet as they leave the stadium early. I think that would be Tom Brady's favorite scenario, Sean, without a doubt. Brian, good afternoon to you from Longview, Texas, John. I hope everything's going well for you up there in Beantown. My prediction for the game is simple. Patriots win 28-10. I think the Patriots' offense will wear out the Seahawks' D since Seattle's offense is not the scoring type. Our defense will handle Seattle's offense easily, which will cause Seattle's defense to be out on the field more. Dave in Monterey. John, although I'm a leery of the Seahawks, I feel the Pats will win this one. That said, here are my predictions. Seattle defense scores more TDs than their offense. Ooh, that doesn't bode well. Pats defense gets four sacks. Lloyd gets a touchdown. Pats have a 100-yard rusher against this defense that isn't Steven Ridley. I like that prediction. Pats win 31-17, he says. Good thought-provoking stuff there, Dave. Bruce in Baltimore says, I don't think this is going to be an easy outing for the Pats. I think the offense starts slow. Again, gives hope to both the Seahawks defense and the Seattle fans. Pats fans will also be worried as Brady gets knocked around a little. Looks initially frazzled, but the Pats defense will be stout. True to form, the Pats O will be methodical, make the appropriate adjustments, ending the half ahead 13-7 with run and pass balance. Now we're going to predict the halves. Sounds like we should play a game of quarters here, huh? Third quarter, we'll add an additional touchdown before we again feel some slight fourth quarter panic from the defense as Seattle puts together a couple of drives for a touchdown and a field goal. We add 3 points as well. We hold on to win 23-17. I hope I'm wrong. Pats bring out an offensive machine and lay a 40-burger on Seattle. I like that, 40-burger. But I won't be betting my paycheck on that. Let's lay a 40-burger on them. I like the phrase personally, half a hundred. Let's hang half a hundred on them. Oh, Todd says, rain and wind limits the Pats passing game, which could be a problem as we are already aware of. But short passing game and the newfound running game work in the Pats' favor. Big vents and spikes, they shut down the Seahawks running game 26-16. Pats. Marco, the red bone from Mexico. First of all, I love the show. Second, just to give my opinion on Ridley. I think we have to start him. I believe that a punishment for that fumble will be the only thing that will slow this kid. He's a perfect combination of power, speed, and aggressiveness. You can say when you see him run that he's hungry, mad for every yard, and to show this team he can be the workhorse running back they need for this year's offense. Could not agree more, Marco. I think the Patriots will win 31-17. I think they will expose this defense more than everybody thinks. They've done it before. They'll do it again. It'll be a great day from Ridley once again. He says, thanks for reading my email. Sorry for my English. What's wrong with your English? It's good. Vamos, Patriotas! Yeehaw! We need to get that one on. We need to record that one. Yeah! Vamos, Patriotas! Stop screaming. very good, Marco. Frank says, only thing that keeps Seattle in the game is crowd noise and weather. However, the weather will assist the Pats D with the first shutout of the season. Ooh, he says the second will be the Jets. Pats will win 28-0. Probably should be 48-0, but the Seattle defense will save the offense and a couple out of their four turnovers. Dollar and a dream, right? Yes, Frank. Dollar and a dream. Nick in New Haven. If anything, the Patriots play better in poor weather. Bill, if anything, is a situational genius. Patriots threw the ball at will against the Titans in the snow a few years ago. Those are good points. One of my favorite Pats quotes of all time, which came from Vince Wilfork after dominating the Bears in Chicago in the snow, is, well, we have snow in New England, too. What's the weather in Seattle? Cold, overcast, rainy? Sound familiar to anyone who's ever been in New England in the fall? Thank you, Nick in New Haven. Good points all. Let me grab a couple of Facebook posts here. Daryl, the thing I feel is most telling about this franchise is the way we look at each game. Do we ask ourselves, how can we win this game? Or do we ask, how can the opponent win? The way I see it, every game is the Patriots to lose. I can't remember going into a game in the last decade thinking that we were overmatched in the actual underdog, irrespective of what the line of the spread may be. That said, I like the Pats in this one. He says, Pats by 14, 31-17. Axel says, unfortunately, I missed the last two shows. I'd like to share some thoughts from the Broncos game. Good. I'll read them. But I am going to say your prediction for Sunday is Pats 30, Seahawks 17. Thank you, Axel. Michael says, prediction Thursday. Seattle gets the ball to start, scores on a drive, takes some significant time off the clock. New England starts in its first drive, gives the ball back. Seattle gets a field goal, scaring New England fans. Then New England gets going, performs well until the fourth quarter when they take the foot off the gas. Seattle makes a score in the fourth, but then New England steps it up for one last solid drive, 38-24. Wow, that's the highest scoring game that's been predicted all week. Mary Beth, almost one-ups you there, though, Michael. She says, I think the Pats will win at 34-21. The offense has been improving with every game. The offensive line must provide protection this week. No doubt about that. That is hugely key. The defense also needs to make a stand. Protection of the ball will be key. No turnovers. Thank you. And then our friend Tim in the Great Northwest. I'll get an early prediction in, or late as the case may be. It's my fault, Tim. I think the Pats win this one comfortably. Seattle's D is very good, but this offense, especially if Hernandez is back, is something they haven't seen. If the D can shut down Marshawn Lynch in the ground game, and I believe they can, I don't see how they're going to move the ball. It's the style of O against our D that matches up so well. No turnovers, no problem. 27-13. Yeah, you know what? Like I said, Tim, you and I agree on a lot of things, and I kind of agree with that. I really am having trouble seeing right now where Seattle's going to score against this Patriots D. I mean, you know, well, not so much the Patriots D, but just seeing how they score, period. And I think this will give the Patriots D an opportunity to improve itself. Brian gets the last word here on the game, and he says, tough game to predict. Don't buy this intangible Russell Wilson talk. Kid can make all the throws. Less than a handful of quarterbacks in the NFL to say that about. Seattle lets him loose with this game. Probably no huddle. Seattle's the real deal, but the return of Aaron Hernandez leads to a 34-22 Patriots win. I would not be surprised or upset to see Seattle pull off an upset. Really? Upset? You wouldn't be upset? He says, get ready for an old-fashioned slobber knocker. That could very well be the case. That would not surprise me. I would be mildly surprised if Seattle wins because, again, I just don't know if they have enough offense to score. That's the big concern. All right, thanks to Mike Salk from ESPN Seattle, obviously pro football guru Russell Baxter, Eric Scalavino from PFW in the playbook today. Same Pats time, same Pats channel. Next Tuesday we'll recap Seattle with Nitpick Tuesday, and then we start thinking about the J-E-T-S. But coming up next on Patriots.com Radio, Todd and Bill with Football Nation. Have a great weekend.
Tuesday through Thursday. Hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2.